Chevra, good morning. We are in the final of our three series class about meat and milk in the kitchen, or the awareness of separating meat and milk in our kitchens, which is probably the greatest source of having a non-kosher kitchen, because Baruch Hashem, we're living in a world today that things are properly marked. It's very rare that someone's kitchen becomes not kosher because something not kosher went in there. The vast majority, the kitchen has a question, a halachic question, because inadvertently we mixed meat and milk. There is also another topic, since this is the last one, I'll squeeze it in here. The second greatest source of having a non-kosher kitchen is when our kitchen help or house help, God bless them all, if they do some cooking in the kitchen. And that will also pose a kashrus question, and I'll speak out the different opinions and halacha, and people should know. Bachlal, I'm speaking always to my knowledge, to the best of my knowledge, giving you over how Chabad Rabbanim rule. There are many areas in halacha that other Rabbanim are more lenient, and it's good to know that, because many times people feel that it's a sum-zero game. If it's not, I once said words and I regret them. There's nothing I can do. Many years ago, I was speaking about the importance of not having chol avakum. So I said, chol avakum is like treif. And that was a mistake. You can't say that. You can't say that, because not everyone keeps chol of Yisrael. And if a person feels, well, if chol avakum is treif, so then I might as well eat treif. That's God forbid. It's not, it's nisht emes. So there's going to be many nuances of what I'm saying. I'll share it right now. There are various opinions in halacha, and I'll share what Chabad and many and most of the Fruma Haredi world, how we apply certain concepts. Okay, so we said we're going to speak about parve, which is all connected to meat and milk. Now, the meaning of parve is very simple. We know what milk is. Milk is milk of a cow and all of its derivatives. It can also mean milk from a goat, or milk of any other kosher animal. Milk from non-kosher animals is not kosher, but we're speaking about a kosher species that was milked. And meat, biblically, includes all meats from animals, whether they are the animals that we are accustomed to eating, like a cow, like a lamb or goats, if people eat them. And it also includes animals that most of us don't eat because the meat is not that tasty. But kosher animals like deer, like giraffe, these are all kosher animals. So that's meat. By rabbinic law, we include in meat fowl, by rabbinic law. And it's important to know that, because sometimes when you have certain sophisticated questions in which there's a general rule that a doubt and a rabbinic, we are more lenient. So even today, practically, it's good to remember. It's always good to remember. This is what God said, and this is the fence that our chachamim added around the Torah. So we know what milk is, we know what meat is, and they cannot be cooked together by Torah law. By rabbinic law, they cannot be mixed together, even though you're not cooking it, which is why we have in the kitchen separate dishes and separate pots, etc. Parve is everything else that's not this or not that. So it sounds quite simple, right? This is parve. I'm pointing to the delicious fruits on the table. The crackers are parve. Yes and no. What's the yes and no? Here's where it gets interesting. What's the status of food that has no milchiks in it, but that it was cooked in milchik utensils? That's the big question. What's the status of foods that is parv, but it was cooked in fleishik utensils? What is its status? This is where people perhaps should just hear chazona. And here again, many times a person is under the presumption that the food is parv, and it might not be. And then there is something which all the kashrus organizations today, all of them, the big ones, OU, okay, they went back to marking DE, which is a great thing to know what it means, DE, and how does that affect the dinim of parv, milchiks, and fleishiks. Because even though we now spend time in between milchiks and fleishiks, we wait an hour, we meaning Chabad, al pi halacha, you don't have to wait any time. Al pi halacha, you eat milchiks. What you need to do is two dinim. Number one is you have to end the meal, meaning you make an after bracha, and you have to rinse your mouth with solids and liquids, which can mean brushing your teeth, or it can mean, the Hasidish way, eating meat and drinking something. Eating and drinking. So that's solid and liquid, or brushing your teeth. Once you did one of these two, like Shavuos, you have a milchik meal, you can't have it in the same meal, you bench, you rinse your mouth, solid liquid, and al pi halacha, you can have fleshiks. We follow a statement that's written in the Zohar, which is interesting, that normally we don't halachically behave like it says in Kabbalah, but the Zohar writes that we should wait an hour, and we also wait an hour. Other people wait a half an hour. I heard all different types of minhagim, but really, you can't eat them together, but one after the other is fine. From meat to milk, there's a much longer amount of time that we need to wait. Many different minhagim also, all properly sourced, never in the same meal. I hope I'm not speaking off the cuff. Maybe there's a community that only waits 1 hour. It could be. I know that there are communities that wait 3 hours. That's predominant by many Ashkenazi groups. And even people that wait 6 hours, it doesn't have to be full 6 hours. It can be you entered the sixth hour. It's good to know that.
What do you mean entered the sixth hour?
That means that if 5.5 hours passed, I'm in the sixth hour, I can already have milchiks.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Now, I'm not saying you can, many people are, they wait a whole 6 hours, but al pi halacha, what the concept is that we're not cooking it together. The whole not eating it together is rabbinically. And not only that, the Gemara says to have them in separate meals. Happens to be that in the times of the Talmud, normally there would be a large period of time between one meal and the other. He said, the meaning in America is you eat the whole time, eating the whole time. And it's good and bad. It's a new thing. You know what I'm saying? My mother, she grew up in a time that there was not enough food. Not in Russia, even in America, there was not enough food. They put food on the table twice a day or three times, whatever the meaning, and there was no food. If you were lucky, they had fruit or even the nashing. It was so unhealthy, like a candy. You can't call that eating. Now, mamash people, they have offices, they have a nash. Every hour they have to have a coffee. When you're having a coffee, you might as well have a cracker. If it's good or bad to the body, I have no idea, but it's a different world. Then people waited many hours between meals. So that's, the Gemara says, to wait between meals. The question is, how do you define that? Either benching and eating right away or waiting 6 hours. Okay. So let me ask you, if I have a pot that was used to make something with cheese, lasagna, a pot or a pan that was used for lasagna, a pot. You make lasagnas in pots?
Pans.
So what do you make in a pot that's milchiks?
Big
Ziggy.
Huh? Big Ziggy. Yeah. Mac and cheese.
Mac and cheese. Okay. Mac and cheese is good.
Yes.
I don't know the word, I don't know. I won't say it. So you have mac and cheese. And now someone went ahead and let's say the water machine broke. They went to the coffee. They filled it up with water. The pot is clean. And you have hot water. Can I drink that together with fleishiks? Question number two is, if I drink it, do I become milchiks? Which means, like, I'm a Chabad person, I wait an hour between one and the other, do I have to wait an hour? This is a real practical question.
I think no and no.
Okay, you probably think correct. No, Chabad. Okay, in other words, when I said last week, let's devote a class for Padiv, it's very easy to define Padiv. I don't have to go through all the food types to tell you what Padiv is. All we need to know is, if it's not milchiks and it's not fleishiks, it's Padiv. So I know what Padiv is. The reason why Padiv becomes a confusing issue in the kitchen is because many times we use kalim, we use utensils in the preparation of Padiv that prior were either used for milchiks or for fleishiks. And then the question will be, what is the status of that food? Now I know that these classes are quick, but we mentioned a lot of important principles that will come to bear before answering the question. First question to answer the question is, when I say that I used Big Mac, let's go with my mushel, it's a good mushel. Mm-hmm. You know, in Brazil, I used to make water the whole time on the fire. Not everyone has machines. Or I'm trying to think of another, huh?
I used to.
You still do it?
Like so cool.
It's good. I have in my house now, I have a little pot that I used to boil hard eggs, little pot. And I'm a chaya, and I put water in there, but I use it for eggs. But let's say this pot was once used to make something with cheese, or vice versa, something that's used sometimes for fleishiks. And now I warmed up water. I'm just giving you an example. I want to know if this water has the status of the pot. So to answer the question, You have to ask, when was the last time that this pot was used for milchiks or for fleishiks? Let's stick to one example. It's a milchik pot, Big Mac pot. Makes a big difference. If the pot was used within 24 hours to make milchiks from when I cooked the water, that's called ben yoimai. That makes my question more relevant. If the pot was used for milchiks, but more than 24 hours or more passed since it was used last, then the taste of the milchiks is considered spoiled, pogum, and it's a non-issue. In other words, I gave examples last week or 2 weeks ago of the Eved L'chatchila. Here, I'm cooking water. I'm allowed to cook water. I didn't accidentally put meat in the pot. I cooked water. I'm allowed to, now that I have this water, being that even if there is some taste of the milk, but how did it get into the water? It got into the water because more than 24 hours passed, then this is taka pot of a water.
So you can drink a coffee with that water and eat it with a brownie.
Very good. Very good. Very good. Wait, I'll get to the oven in a moment.
Pour it into a meat soup if you need more water in your meat soup.
Very good question. Very good question. I want to come back to that. This is what happens the whole time. Mm-hmm. But if the pot was used within 24 hours, just want to finish this thought, then how do you call the water? Would you call this water milchiks?
Within 24 hours, yeah.
Okay, so that's let's call this DE. It's a different, it's an in-between. Let me tell you what that means.
Right.
That means that this water was made on dairy equipment. Whenever you read DE, it means that first of all, it's clean. Not it was clean, that the keli had no milchiks in it. But there are many orange juice lines right now. Today in America, rightfully so, many products sold in the market needs to be pasteurized. Milk is pasteurized. When I grew up in Brazil, the milks were not pasteurized. It was disgusting. They used to come in big cans, called visrol. Then we used to cook it on the fire. And the milk forms as a disgusting something on top. And then when you pour the milk, those little pieces go in there, and they're mamish, for me as a kid, traumatized. So then they used to have sifters. And then these things were so unattractive that they used to go through the sifter. And then my grandmother used to give it to me, and I needed to drink it. I'm telling you, these memories, this traumatized me more than getting beaten in Cheder.
Do you drink milk now, or you're traumatized from milk?
No. The Brazilian milk. Everything was Brazilian. And then when I lived later with my wasteri in Brazil, the milk never spoiled. Ever spoiled. Which means it was not milk. Oh, nice. If milk lasts long, there's no milk in there. And that's good halachically, right? Mama's fake milk.
Doesn't spoil. They found some kind of substance in the milk.
That is probably some of us that Brazilian is an experiment for the world. So if America comes up with a product, they want to know if it kills people.
They
send it to Brazil for 20 years, telling it for sure. And then they let everyone know we're the guinea pigs of the world. That's my sheet. I know I'm being recorded. It's probably Emma's. So anyway, so milk. So we used to have milk. My father, my grandmother used to wake up my father 4 in the morning because she needed someone to get milk. So him and his brother used to take a trolley. This is in the 1930s to go who knows in Pinheiros. That was just nothing to get milk. That marked my father so much that when my grandmother passed away, the greatest eulogy in my life, maybe because my grandmother, and she was buried in the Holy Land. So they made a eulogy on the way to the airport. And my father spoke. And he began his speech saying, Ma, he called him Mamashi, I forgive you. That's how he began. It was very moving. And he went through all of the crazy things that happened to them as children because my grandparents wanted to make sure that the kids are from. So, Mesiras Nefesh, Tavchal of Yisrael. But he Mamashi, and even in the 70s, in the 80s, milk, in the 80s it began, that you can mamash get milk, that's already pasteurized. Chol of Yisrael. Before that, Chol of Yisrael meant you got a can of milk, a big can, and then you used to cook it, and it was mamash disgusting. Oh, terrible. And then they went from milk to fake. The bags, and results bag, right? Bags, not cartons.
After the bags, long the life. Cartons.
But I was a long life. Long life, you can open it, out of the fridge, it's going to live. A month later, the milk is perfect. It's paint. I don't know what's in there. Okay, so So how did I get fakrochen? I got fakrochen. We had those pots. So if you cook water in that pot, and so if within 24 hours, after 24 hours, if it's, oh, I was going to oranges, so it has to be pasteurized. That's how I got there. There are many orange juices here that are pasteurized, or all of them are pasteurized. Many of them are pasteurized on the same equipment that's used to pasteurize milk. In other words, if they were to kosher those machines between the milk and the orange juice, then it's a non-issue. The milk goes out, the machines wash themselves. It's real professional machines. There isn't a trace of milk in there. But the kalim, the same machinery that pasteurizes, was used to pasteurize milk. And they don't wait 24 hours. These are big machines. Every minute counts. It's being worked like a machine. So that orange juice is going to be, you're going to have on the packaging, DE. What does DE mean? DE means that it's not milchix. I wait an hour between milchix and fleishix. If I drink the orange juice, I don't have to wait an hour. I don't have to wait an hour. But I can't have the orange juice together with meat. That's what it means. That's what DE does. That's an interesting phenomenon. And the same thing vice versa. If something is made in a utensil that was used for fleishix, if 24 hours or more passed, then you're good. Then it remains padava. If the keli was clean. If the pot was clean, you made meatballs and spaghetti. You made it 20 minutes ago, and now the pot is clean. There's no grease. Mamish clean. And you filled it up with some water. Now the water, and you made a coffee. I'm not allowed to add milk in the coffee, nor can I drink the coffee together with milk. But right after I have the coffee, I can have milchix. I don't become fleishix, but I can't have it together with milchix. That's very good to know. And that's why they're right now. DE has another component, which is, that DE, if people don't have chol vakum, then we wouldn't eat it.
What do you mean?
In other words, if like this orange juice, if people that don't have chol vakum, right. I don't have chol vakum. So if this orange juice, if it would say OUDE or OKDE, then I wouldn't buy it because there's chol vakum in here, and I would stay for
within,
no, that's
within the 24 hours.
Within the 24 hours, exactly, because they, by default they only write DE. If they're not certain that 24 hours passed. Sometimes could be 24 hours passed.
And then they wouldn't write DE.
Then they would not, if 24 hours passes, they would not write DE.
Even if it's on the equipment.
Yes, and even though they didn't kosher it. That's good to know that.
Technically, if you go to someone's house that doesn't keep Chol Yisrael, and they haven't used their kelim in 24 hours, and then you go there and they cook you something dairy, is it okay to use
your kelim? So by Chol Vakum, no. For people that are medagdik, don't have chol vakum.
It really is.
I'll tell you, and I want to explain to you the difference. This is very good. Like, what's the difference? Here's the difference. When it comes, by the way, by non-kosher also, I want the same question. First of all, again, I'm not saying it's not kosher. It's not kosher to our standard. But let's speak about non-kosher. If someone has a non-kosher kitchen, but I know they didn't use anything for 24 hours and everything is clean.
Yeah.
Same. That's the same question.
Yeah.
I wouldn't either. Lachatchila. If I ate there, but the avid, I didn't eat treif.
Why?
Oh, very good. Because non-kosher itself went into the keli, even though 24 hours passed and b'diavad, but lechatchila, it's considered what? Not kosher. Okay. Not kosher. Not kosher is inherently something that I don't want to eat. Milchix or fleishix are not inherently not kosher. So even though it was, so 24 hours passed, but so lechatchila, we don't rely on 24 hours. But what am I trying to rely for? There's no kashrus issue. It's about a mixing issue. That's a lot less serious.
What's about a mixing issue?
Like milchix and fleishix.
Ah, okay.
In other words, when it comes to having
that's
the
less serious than non
or treif, not that yeah.
Oh, treif.
Or halavakum, or however right. You want. In other words, if the problem that if the keli was used for something that I don't eat that. Then I'll never lechatchila rely on 24 hours.
The issue is the taste. And if the taste has gone out of the keli anyway.
There's something is there.
There's
a borderline taste.
You know what? Like I no, just don't
there's a borderline taste. There's a borderline
it's
48
taste.
Hours. No.
The issue is the taste.
It's yeah, the taste
oh,
of.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's one day, and I said last year 1 year. Hmm. There's no 48 hours.
What's 1 year?
After 1 year, we can even be more lenient. Hmm. Sometimes even lechatchila.
But if you're saying that the taste of the challah. Still in the pot.
A little bit.
A little bit. So can't you use that same principle that if you use the Challah Bisrael dairy pot, it would still have a little bit? It's the principle is just being used in a way that it's, I don't understand why it's not the same across the board.
Because, so, okay, no. The difference is that when we're discussing something that is inherently not kosher on any level.
But it's even with halabakum, it's a doubt. So it's like a doubt on a doubt.
No, it's not a doubt. No, it's either we're going to take the approach that it's okay, or we're going to take the approach that it's not okay. Once we take the approach that rabbinically it's not okay, so the keli has in it something that's not okay. Versus a keli that has in it milchiks or fleishiks, the keli is okay. The keli is okay. And there's a different way of looking at it. Any prohibition that comes from a mixture, by default, is less serious. Because it only becomes prohibited if it gets mixed later. Now it's not even a mixture.
So it's not a taste issue?
It all comes from a taste issue. The question is, we have to give a ruling. So there's many opinions. But once we give a ruling, we follow the ruling. So when it comes to a keli that was used for something that we deem not kosher, then lechatchila, we can never rely on the 24-hour. When it comes to, is this milchiks or fleishiks, then we lechatchila rely on, is it within 24 hours or after 24 hours?
Okay, so the not kosher, is it offense?
Everything is offense. Yes, it's offense. That you might end up eating.
So we don't get desensitized to something that's completely not okay.
Because you might, the logic is, if you're going to start eating, then one time, you won't have the 24 hours.
Right.
And then you'll have something that's not inherently not kosher. And don't forget that my milk and meat, even if I drink that with milchiks and this and the sleishiks in it, I'm not cooking it together. Even if I violated the amount, it's already a step less.
Okay.
Are we clear with this? In other words, by utensils, the question will be the 24 hours past. This is very relevant in our kitchens. It means if you're using your pot to cook water, remember, when was the last time, even if it's a fleishik pot, if you used it within 24 hours to cook noodles, I don't care about that. When was the last time you used this pot for meat? If within 24 hours you use the pot, then this water is called ME, meat equipment, which means that if you drink this water, you are not fleishiks, but you can't have it together with. I want to add one more thing, hold your thought before I forget, that by ice cream, there was a big debate, that many ice creams that are parv are made on equipment that is previously made for dairy. And I think the OU claimed that they don't have to write DE. Why not? Because why do you write DE? If it's DE, you won't eat it together with meat. No one eats ice cream with meat. Yeah. Ice cream is a dessert. That was their logic.
Unless you put it on an apple pie that was baked in an oven with chicken.
Okay, I'm just saying. Correct. There you go. So that Abanim this guy's wife never made that for him. He doesn't know. He knows in his house after the meal, if he behaves, he gets a piece of ice cream. I mean, I don't know. You can laugh, but sometimes mamish that. I just want to point out this concept.
Is the oven also?
So it is okay to have this kind. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
So it is okay to have this kind of ice cream that says OUDE after a meat meal?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Wait.
Yes.
How about we hold that we can have DE?
I don't have DE by OU for another reason. Oh, not because of those inflation. It's because since OU, if it's OUDE Challah Bisrael, that means buy the ice cream, serve it after the meat was served.
No, people can smell, like they buy these Oreos that are DE and they're parv, and then they're making a cake and they top it up with Oreos. And they look and they're like, oh, it's parv, it's DE. And then they cut it up and they put it in a cake that was baked in a fleishik pot, a fleishik oven. And
but if it was baked without 24 hours.
Wait. Let me go. A few things. No, not too far. No, you gave a real case. Good. Yafa, she's touching your thing. So, a minute.
Let's hear it.
You put four things together. Let's think about the oven. The oven, if I have a fleishik oven, and the oven is clean.
It's Erev Shabbos, I'm cooking everything.
I hear you. The oven is clean. And in the oven.
When you say clean, you mean like self-clean?
No. There's no meat hanging around over there.
Okay.
It's a clean oven.
Okay.
You put something in a pan.
Let's say challah, a parva.
Very good. You put challah in a pan.
Okay.
That challah is parva 100%.
Okay. Okay.
Even if the oven was used within 24 hours to have steak in there.
Okay.
It's different than a pot.
I'm on that challah?
Yes, I could. Very important. But listen, Yaf, you have the difference. Okay. My oven, no, the oven is not a pot. We spoke about this last week. The oven is not a pot. The oven is not a pot. If the tray in which I'm putting the challah, that's just like cooking. I'm not talking about that.
Right.
That tray, if there's mamish gook on the grate and there's moisture, vited fleishiks.
What if you put baking sheet on top of it? Then is it part of the challah?
If you're talking about if the pan,
the pan is all
fleishiks.
Vegetables. What do you put?
No, I'm saying.
In the oven, it's a fleishik pan.
Like this.
Yeah, but if it hasn't been used in 24 hours.
Even without that, one second. If theoretically, mm-hmm. if you're putting the paper, the cook, whatever you call that, the wax parchment paper, if there's no moisture between the parchment paper and the pan, mm-hmm. see, I'm not the maven. If taka there's no moisture, you vayter good. I'm not saying you should do it, but hold on. It's not so simple in an oven to say that it's fleishiks. Don't jump to fleishiks. I'll tell you something even more, very interesting. Bread by us needs to be part of. If we make
bread
mamash, I tell you this. If we make bread, now if you make milchike bread that looks unique, that's okay. If I make bread, normal bread, and it's milchiks, either because there's milk in it or because...
Butter,
then not only can I not eat it, I cannot derive benefit by it, by rabbinical. I can't sell it, can't give it as a gift to it's a treif, not treif, treif. Why? Because bread is, until recently, bread was the staple food. And people, even when people ate meat, they ate it with bread. Everything you ate was eaten with bread. So bread will be eaten both for milchiks and for fleishiks. Same thing, we don't want bread to be fleishiks. I'm going off track, but that's like part of bread. Bread has to be made part of. Now, it doesn't mean the bakery, give me an example. Schwartz bakes a lot of milchik stuff, cheese danishes. It doesn't make the bread milchiks.
And that's because.
That's because. I want to answer. He's not going to make. He's not going to bake the bread at the same time that he's baking the danishes.
Right.
The ovens are very clean there. And the trays. The molds, whatever.
The
bread trays are part of only used for bread. So if there'll be, if to, and I'll tell you more, even if.
Wait.
No. Okay, one second. Well, let's go. We spoke about sponges this week. No, one second. Sponges are a problem. Okay.
We
want to get over this. We spoke. So, a minute. I have, one second. Is this clear about the bread?
Thank you. No, if you're baking your.
Hold the sponge thought for a second. Yeah. Yes.
And it's, forget the pan, forget everything. You have chicken in the oven that's in the same time being kept warm. Even after your challah is baked, and you're warming everything up in the oven until time to.
If steam left the chicken and went into my bread is fleishiks.
Okay, and that is not kosher now?
That's
also.
The chazal, I remember milchiks, I don't remember about fleishiks. So I have to check and answer you.
I can't remember if you have to do it in a different shape or something, but I
mamish, I have to look. Correct. It makes sense. Common sense is that don't make bread milchiks or fleishiks. Not only that, bechal bread, the knives that I cut bread with. If I use a knife to cut bread, even though I hope my kitchen is clean kitchen, knives, we say that since knives are used to cut things that are hard, some of the grease of the foods adhere a little bit of real grease of meat. And therefore, if I'm going to take my fleishadika steak knife and I will cut my bread, not the whole bread, but the part that touched the knife is fleishiks.
So knives are, you don't go with the 24-hour rule?
No, 24 hours doesn't help for a knife because by a knife, there's a side of the taste in the knife. People have bread knives. That's the whole beauty of having bread knives. But okay, so first of all, I want to go back to your sponge. So first of all, when it comes to stuff made in the oven, if the oven didn't have anything in there of the milchiks or fleishiks and it was clean, then if the pan is part of it, it remains part of it. And that's the way breads are made.
But you said before that even if something's in the oven, you could still cook the bread in it and it remains part.
So that depends. That depends on steam. So it depends if it was covered or not.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Why I'm not giving. I'm not going to say right away it's fleishiks also.
Got it. But if it's covered, then.
If it's covered, then you're also good. I would not do it. Yeah.
Understood.
Okay, just if it's covered, if there's no steam that's leaving,
getting into the bread.
More than you have, if there's chicken underneath it versus on the side, it can also make a difference.
Right.
If steam got into the bread, then the bread becomes fleishigs. Okay. Or if you're doing it in a milchika oven and you have pizza and you have bread on top and it's steaming up, then if it's not at the same time, even though it was just used, it's clean, your bread is parv.
And once it's been on a table that is or milchik for a meal, at that point it has taken on that role.
So many people have that stringency because when you put bread on a table and people are eating, even some people eat with their hands. There's a lot of common sense in the kitchen. Many people have different, once bread goes on the table, it's on the table, who knows, maybe someone was eating soup and some soot splashed on it. It's all common sense. Many people have separate salt and pepper because you put salt, look, sometimes not even steam, sometimes people don't realize it. Even adults, the salt, the top of this, the holy part of the salt shaker touches your food when you're shaking it on top. Ketchup, even adults, sometimes, there's many items that the thing itself is power, but once you use it with, many people have near their stoves, they have salt. And when they're cooking, they stick their fingers in there. You have separate ones. Again, common sense, because when you're preparing food, and you're touching your steak, and then you're putting your hands in, a little bit of the steak juice went into the salt. Then when you're making your eggs, your omelet with cheese, what you think that salt might have some meat in it. Now, probably very little, and if it happened, not today, if it's bottled, b'shishim, l'chatchila. Keep it, I'm going to go to the sponge. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead. So I made challah in my oven. Right. Fleishig oven, the pan is used only for bread.
Right.
Certainly never used for fleishigs. So now my challah is parv, my pan is parv. What happened now?
So I use a meat sponge to clean the pan.
So I guess, do you clean it in very hot water? That's question number one.
No, just rinse it. I don't even know if you're not supposed to use soap on these pans. Just rinse it.
No, very hot water.
No.
If you don't use very hot water, it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. And even if you use very hot water, if you always use it with soap, it's also not a problem.
Okay.
Sponges is the worst part of the kitchen. Because once you use, we said last week, if I sponge, many people do use hot water, and the proof is they get these gloves, not only not to get dirty, these thick gloves are bekavana that you can put the hot water on, mm-hmm. and items get cleaned with hot water better than not. I think there's a reason why we have water in the kitchen. So if I have a fleishig pot, and I'm using hot water, and I have a sponge, my sponge not only will get some pieces of meat in it, but my sponge will absorb the taste of the meat. So it's mamash of fleishik sponge. That's a problem if I use this sponge for milchiks.
What if you use the sponge for parv?
So let's.
Like if you have a parv pot.
No problem, then it remains parv.
But you don't have a parv sponge, you have fleishik or milchik sponge.
So if, very good, very good question. So if you never wash your pots with that sponge, with hot water that you can't put your head in, if it's warm water, then you're good. But if you're putting it with very hot water and you're using soap, you're also fine. If the sponge is clean. I would be careful with sponges.
Yeah.
I would have a power of the sponge.
One more question. If you make brownie in a brownie pan that you usually only use for brownies, but you make it in your fleishig oven, let's say for dessert for after Shabbos, but in the morning you want to have it with your coffee, with milchik coffee.
Great. That's exactly what we're talking about.
Okay, let's even brownie for dessert for Friday night.
In a fleishig pan.
So it's in a...
No, it's a parv.
It's a parv.
But in a fleishig oven.
But it doesn't matter.
If you serve it Friday night, you have some leftovers, you want for breakfast, Shabbos morning.
I guess, yeah.
With your coffee.
If you bake the brownies when there was meat or chicken in the oven,
no, never.
Then the brownies is parv. You can have it with milk. That's the website.
The question Clear. Is if it's on the table.
That's common sense. So that's a commonsensical thing.
But that's also like, it's after the meal. You don't have, I'm not having food on my meal.
It's common sense. You know your family. With certain foods, a family can say that once I put it on my table, my kids touched it, or that uncivilized spouse touched it with the dirty hands, and there you go. It's common sense.
But the oven isn't a problem.
The oven, the pots are a problem. That's what I'm saying. Certain things that are made in a pot. And again, if it wasn't used for 24 hours, you're also good.
Right.
And even if it was within 24 hours, all it means is you can't have it together with the opposite. milchiks. But after you have that, you can have the other.
Can you take that pan and now make brownies and put it in the dairy oven after it's been baked in the fleischig oven? Is it completely?
You're saying if it's a pan?
Like, can this pan go back and forth from oven to oven?
Theoretically, yes. I would do it in my kitchen. You have to know whether you have a clean oven or not.
Right.
In other words, I think bechlal, our ovens are very clean because no one puts anything on the grates. I don't have anything on the... Everything that goes on the oven, maybe goes in a tray.
The grease does... I mean, there's splatters sometimes.
Okay. Okay, so let's go through. So that's what we spoke about last week. So let's say that's on the grate, there's a little bit of something. If the pan is dry, don't forget our oven is hot. Now, if I'm putting in water, there's gonna be a lot of vapor. If I'm putting in a solid, even a batter, there's no steam coming out of the batter. So there's no moisture there. So what has to happen? Well, actually, if there's actual meat and the meat goes onto the tray, then the tray becomes fleischig. No.
And if the steam goes into it, does the steam flavor go? I always wonder about the steam flavor. Like, if you're making a cup of coffee, and let's say I have milk in this, and I want to refill it with hot water, and I go over to the hot water thing on the meat side, does the steam from the milk go back in and
yes. Take off the entire thing? Yes. So we spoke about this when we gave Hilcha Shabbos. Yeah.
It's the same thing. Like, some people take a water bottle and spray it inside the oven when they're baking the challah in order for moisture to develop dafka in the oven. So does that take the entire oven and take out everything that's in there and really, like...
If there's fleischigs on the wall, yeah.
So even if there's grease, I mean, there's always...
How greasy are your ovens? I don't know.
It happens. Like, when you're baking, like, and cooking for Shabbos, it's like...
I know, but in between you're cleaning.
You know, like... Yeah, I make my chicken, and then I make the muffins, and then I did it. And it's like, you're not self-cleaning and cleaning your oven between each dish.
What we do, Shoshana, is if you're using your trays only for pyrav, don't have them in the oven at the same time as, and then that food will be considered mamash pyrav.
Okay.
That's the way we do it.
But the drips, are those drips like...
If there's real drips, you got yourself a problem. Not a kashrus, a problem of fleishiks. I mean, if I were to suspect that some real moisture entered my bread or my Danish or whatever it is, then it assumes the status of fleishiks or milchiks.
Okay, say stovetop. Sorry to ask a million questions.
Go ahead.
You have a stovetop, right? Yep. And sometimes the water boils over. So you're making a chicken soup and you left the thing on too high and it bubbles over and it falls on the grate and then you take it off and you take another pot that's potentially parved and you're making hot water on that same grate to make yourself a cup of coffee. Is that okay to put milk
in? So I guess, being that in halacha there's a debate whether you need to have separate stovetops for milchiks and fleishiks, and many are of the opinion that you don't have to, and their logic is that since the fire is on, when the milchiks or fleishiks fell on the grates, they got burnt up right away.
From the fire.
So it's constantly kashering itself. So therefore, even if you have the minig of having separate ones, if by accident you mix them up, you don't have a problem.
What does chava do? I'm curious. Do they have
in
a
this?
Separate,
no, because
separate minhag, or is it?
We try to keep. I think a lot of it is common sense. Even having, I have in my house.
The grates is different because getting a lot burned up. Of people only have one oven.
There you go.
So, or like, one. I knew growing up, my father, who was not strict on everything, for some reason he was very strict on this. And we only always had one oven, but we always had a hot plate for milchiks.
I mean, one stovetop.
No, like one of those hot plates that you... Yeah, just a stovetop.
You had one stovetop and you kept that for fleishiks or whatever?
For
or
the milchik.
And then you had something else to keep it separated.
So I was wondering, it's a Chabad thing or it's just kind of...
Your father's common sense because... Or has to do with the nature of the Schwartzy kids. In other words, the more happening it is in the kitchen,
you can't control it.
So you're saying separate grates. Forget about separate grates. It never happened. I have in my house a six top, but it's all one piece. Mm-hmm. So I have the one that's milchiks. We have very little for milchiks. But did it never happen that something spritzed over? It has to happen.
Right.
So the reason why no one cares about it is because they say that in halach it says you can use the same one. Because even the same one, when the food falls, it gets burnt up. Now, if you see the reality otherwise,
then
it's different.
So oven heat is not the same as fire heat?
It's not the same as moisture.
No, we need to kosher. Like, when it's koshering itself by the fire.
It's very different because on the stovetop, it's falling on the fire. It's falling where the fire is. Mm-hmm. In the oven, it's not falling where the fire is.
So then what about an electric stovetop?
That should be better.
Really?
electric stovetop, it's like fire. The problem that we have is with glass. That's a real problem. We have a real problem with glass.
You're saying the glass tops.
The glass tops are very problematic because they don't burn. That's not fire. That's glass.
Right.
We never use it. We never use it. I'll tell you something else.
Problem with glass.
Huh?
Sfaradim don't have any problems. But
okay, Sfaradim don't have a problem with glass.
Right? Even correct. Cooking?
Even with cooking. They say that glass doesn't absorb. They can use the same utensil.
Yeah.
Go back machas and fleishigs.
No, that is something. But like, I'm saying like cooking. Like it's something like you eat and like.
Are you Sfaradim?
What?
Are you Sfaradim?
No.
So it's not a gay. What do you care? Really, I'm saying forget about it. I don't know what to do. Sfaradim used the glass back and forth with heat.
No, but like the stovetop. You know that stovetop?
The stovetop like, for us, it's a problem. The stovetop, the glass,
yeah.
You can't kosher it.
At all?
No, because the only, if there's some milk that went in it, there's no fire here.
This is what I'm talking about. It blows my mind.
The kitchen.
You got to, if you hold halachically that glass does not absorb, then just clean it. But we don't go that way. We didn't Ashkenazim. The only way you would get rid of the taste is by kashering it. If you're gonna pour boiling hot water, it's gonna crack. I saw that. It's treif. It's treif. When you go to a hotel, you cannot kasher glass tops.
At kedekach. Put silver foil on top, like what we.
You can put silver foil on top.
You could put silver foil?
No, don't. We melted it.
Oh, I was going to say that makes no sense.
I know.
Got ruined or something?
It was so scary.
Smart.
Yeah, because the hotels now are switching over their ovens to those.
You mean stovetops? Stovetops that are glass are terrible. Terrible for kashrus. If you're Ashkenazi.
Wow.
Okay, I got another few minutes. Let me chaparain.
Well, I have a question about this pond. So, for example, when you're cooking on the stove and, you know, like, making, like, a chicken soup and then, like, it goes, you know how to say it, it boils and then it spills all over. So, like, which sponge you should use? You should have, like, a cleaning sponge?
Should have a treifa sponge to clean.
You can use this sponge to clean either milk spills or meat spills? That's fine.
I'll tell you why. Because the grates themselves, according to many opinions, can be used for milchiks and fleishiks, even though fleishiks today, 2 minutes later milchiks for the next spot, because the fire, the grates are in the fire.
Okay.
But you want to clean it. You're not only cleaning the top of the grates, you're cleaning underneath. Yeah. Have something that's treif. Have something that you use to clean the stuff.
Like a cleaning sponge. Okay.
Yeah, but, and even if you clean the grates, I don't care, because the grates are constantly getting kashered on the fire.
I've been confused all week about the wet.
Wet.
The wet.
I love it, okay?
I'm telling you all week long.
So just to make a recap. So what we said is like this. Is that, again, there's food and there's the taste of the food.
Mm-hmm.
Ta'am. Taste of the food that gets absorbed in a utensil will go out into food. But if I have two boiling hot utensils touching each other, if there's no moisture in between them, the taste of one utensil doesn't go into another utensil.
Okay. Are we talking only about boiling hot, or is it that if there is a piece of, I don't know, I'll tell you really random, not that this ever happens, but a piece of wet, cold chicken sits on the table,
yep.
And then take it off, and you clear off the table, nothing hot's been placed, and then somebody takes a cucumber that's been cut and wet and puts it on the table, or it fell off the salad, can they eat that cucumber if there was only cold, wet fleishigs on the table?
So I'll answer. If the cold, wet fleishigs was sitting on the table, there's no heat here, for 24 hours.
No, just.
So if, that means that the table absorbed in it the taste of the chicken, then you cleaned it off, then your wet cucumber stayed wet for 24 hours, then you can't have the cucumber.
After 24 hours.
You can't eat it after 24 hours.
You can't eat it.
If there's no heat.
After 24 hours.
Very good. 24 hours is the time needed that substitutes heat.
Uh-huh.
But if you had a table.
What?
What?
No, I was telling myself only in warm, only in hot, only in hot. And now he's telling me cold. What? Cold what?
Okay, so I'm going back to classes. That cooking means three things in halacha. It means what you call cooking with hot heat.
Okay.
It means something that's sitting in moisture. in a keli for 24 hours or more.
Okay.
And the third is if there's a lot of spices in there, something very sharp, because of the sharpness, it's going to convey its taste into the utensil.
Into the kli.
Into the kli. And also, it's going to suck out the taste from the kli, even though everything is cold.
Does that take 24 hours?
No.
That's instantaneous?
Can't say.
An onion, a cut onion, on a milchik table, is that a milchik onion? Instantaneously?
No.
I heard you can't use the same knife. If you use a knife
Correct.
And an onion,
Correct.
Then you can't use that, let's say, flesh, if you can't use the onion for milchik.
Yeah. Correct, but if I'm going to have an onion that's sitting on my table for a while.
How long? Is there a halachic time?
For what?
I'm just very curious about halacha. I just don't get it.
I'm sure there is. I'll find out. How long does it have to sit? And also, I'm sure it has to do whether it's moist or dry.
Like if you,
moisture also takes.
Moisture without sharpness takes 24 hours. If the sharpness, then you don't need 24 hours. It doesn't happen right away.
And if it touches a piece of cheese, it's instantaneously.
Used with a fleshik knife. Onion.
Oh, for sure. Onion now for medicinal reasons. Onion has a koyach to draw out. Sure to suck out. Ears. People have earrings, they put an onion on their ear.
Right.
People put onions, they sleep with them on the bottom of their feet. The onion takes out.
And same thing with the garlic. And
same thing with the garlic.
Garlic, lemon,
right.
Onion.
The lemon too, I didn't know about lemon.
Yeah, lemon is sharp. Oh,
isn't that
sharp?
Grapefruit?
What about orange?
No. Not as sharp.
Depends what kind of orange.
What?
Depends what kind of orange was
tart.
Really?
The sweet oranges, the sharp oranges.
Can I ask you, you probably went over this last week, about ovens kashering from fleshik to milchik.
Okay.
Is there a short answer?
Yeah. Okay. Just to repeat, the Chachamim said...
No, I just feel bad, but I feel like it's an important one.
Kalim, we don't go back and forth.
Right.
Even though you could use a keli for fleshik, wait 24 hours and kasher it, they were afraid that we're going to forget, so we stick. The oven is not a keli.
Okay.
I said last week, everyone is lenient Shavuos time for people that only have one oven.
Right.
And now we are makbid not to use the same oven for both. People don't do that. So we are allowed to kasher it. So you can argue, an oven is not a keli. Oven is part of the wall. Oven is a furniture. People, you have upon whom to rely upon. And especially since 100 years ago, people b'chlal only had one oven and they never kashered it. They just kept it clean.
So you don't have to double wrap?
I'm not saying you shouldn't double wrap. I think now that the community now has separate ovens. I don't want to go back.
But I
on
don't
that.
Have a separate oven.
I understand what you're asking.
Okay.
Theoretically, if you did not double wrap and your oven was clean, you're good. That's for sure.
Okay. Are you also supposed to clean it?
You have to make sure it's clean.
No, obviously.
That's what we were saying here.
But I meant like, you know how I don't have either self-clean. So I was told, I don't know if this is true, but I was told that you put it on 500 for like an hour. Do you have to do that? Is that a myth?
That's not a myth.
Okay.
That's not a myth. The logic behind that is that if you have actual food in there,
by accident,
it's going to burn it up.
Okay.
Makes sense.
And is that timing correct? An hour, 500?
Makes sense to me, yeah. If something doesn't get burnt in 500 in 1 hour.
Right, yeah. It's best if it's double wrap, but if it's not, you're okay.
That's correct.
Okay.
Very good, very good. Well said. The other point, just to bring it out, is that some foods, not all foods, some foods, if they were cooked by a non-Jewish person, we're not allowed to have that food. It's called bishul akum. Or shalakais. And then there is a machloikis whether the kalim have to be kashered or not, to be aware of that. We are machmer that we kasher the kalim, which makes life very difficult. Some people say the kalim don't have to be kashered, but the food should not be eaten. But that's not on all foods. The rule is it has to be a food of importance. What does it mean of importance? That a king would put it on a banquet table.
So like an egg can be impossible.
An egg is something that's oil shulchan malachim. Egg is considered something chashuv.
Oh.
Tuna fish is not, but tuna is.
It's not cooked.
Potato chips is not oil shulchan malachim.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't mean that President Trump doesn't eat potato chips. I'm sure he does, and so did Obama. It means when you're having a banquet, when you're hosting, you know, a king, a state, something, you're not going to serve potato chips. So something that is chashuv enough to go on the table of royalty, and something that cannot be eaten raw, like eggs, like potatoes. It cannot be eaten raw, even though some people do it, but it's very minority. These are foods that if they were cooked by a non-Jew, they may not be eaten by rabbinic law, and we paskin that you have to kasher the kelim. It doesn't mean that the goy was not allowed to be involved in the cooking. Actually, we only need for a Jew to be involved in the most minute amount of the food preparation. Sfardim are a lot more machmer than Ashkenazim. The Sfardim hold that a Yid has to be involved in the actual cooking. Turning on the fire for the Sfardim is not enough. For Ashkenazim, even if they only turn on the fire, it's also good enough. Ashkenazim are a lot more lenient.
Light on your oven.
No. Here, Sfardim are more machmer, and that's the reason they say that Sfardim don't intermarry as much as Ashkenazim.
Because of cooking?
Because the reason why Chazal said that we don't have the foods cooked by a goy is because of intermarriage, and the Sfardim are very medagdic on this. And they taka, they don't. Even in America, it takes them always another generation. Always more. They don't. They're not observant, but they don't. They don't completely Ashkenazi. If you're not today,
wait,
if you're not Haredi,
turn on the fire and.
It doesn't even help to turn on the fire. You have to either you put the food on the fire, or you stoke the pot. You have to do something directly involved
with that cooking.
With the cooking and putting on the fire before the pot is on it. You're not involved in the cooking.
So how can we buy packaged food that has a half? Okay, because if there's a hechsher, then there's supervision.
Sure, that's a big part of Ashgacha today.
But they're turning on machineries. So you're buying a cookie.
I'll give you an example. There's a bread. There's
so much for that 20-year-old who's turning on your oven for you.
There are apps today that a mashgiach from his phone will turn on an oven of a big factories
really
in America.
Awesome. Wait, did again, I missed it.
They have apps that the mashgiach from his phone.
From his phone, it turns on the machine.
That.
For Ashkenazim. For Ashkenazim. Which means that theoretically, from a Sfardim, when they go to most restaurants in Pico, they're not allowed to eat there. Because they for sure, paskin, that if it was made bishul akum, the kelim have to be kashered, and the mashgichim on Pico do not get involved in the food. Ach, they follow Ashkenazim. And they should deal with that. Maybe they already do. I know a couple of years ago it was a problem because Fruma, it's not fear. They don't have their standard. You guys have a much bigger standard in bishul akum. Now it happens often that in our homes, the cleaning lady will cook something in your pot. And could be she's cooking for herself. Now, if she's cooking today, if you got a treif issue, even if she used your food, you got a bishul akum issue. And it's a real issue.
Is the pilot light change anything? Like if we have the gas stoves, does that mean the fire's already on and they can turn it on
yeah.
in your way?
Yeah, if they're getting it from there, if they're getting it from the pilot light. I know by me, there's no pilot light because it makes that no sparks. No pilot light.
Right.
You have to know your kitchen.
You can have a candle, right? You can light a candle.
You have to have a candle, and then you have to you have to know that she took the fire from the candle.
Right.
Instead of saying these crazy Jews, no one is here anyway, I'll light my match.
Yeah.
Okay, final din. This din, we'll close with the Parsha. The Parsha says that Yaakov Avinu asked Esav, Yitzchak Avinu asked Esav to hunt and to prepare him a meal. That's the whole story of the Brachas. Esav had a din of a Yid, but he was not keeping Shabbos then. Much worse, he was Mechalel Shabbos, he was murdering, he wasn't behaving properly. How can Yitzchak ask of Esav to prepare him a meal? Yishalakum. He's a Jew, but he has Mechalel Shabbos. Not observing.
It's probably a different status, right?
So like wow. This is the Nekudah. There is a Machloikas from the beginning until Halacha. Why did the sages say that if a non-Jew made food, you may not eat that food? One reason is because if they'll make food for you, you'll become close to them, and this might lead to intermarriage. Mm-hmm. Reason number two
That's
is,
a real reason.
One of the two reasons, same thing goes with wine.
And bread.
Bread, you know, we don't want to socialize. Socializing doesn't only mean to eat with them, but if my neighbor will make for me food, you feel very close. Mm-hmm. It's personal,
having
it's food. Even if I'm not together, if my neighbor drops off, I came back from whoever, and there's a warm meal for me, brings a closeness. Second reason is because they might put something not kosher in it. And these two reasons find expression in your question. So what happens if someone is in Bechlal not observant, Esav, and they made food, they cooked the whole food. If the issue is that they might put something not kosher, I got a real issue. Because I can't trust that person because they don't care for themselves about kashrus. But if the reason is because not to assimilate, they're Yidden. If they're Yidden, I can marry into their families. Just because the father is not observant doesn't mean the kid won't be observant. It's a whole different thing.
Oh, it's actually shocking.
It's interesting.
I've been to two parties where the hosts were ex-Chabadniks. They're friends of mine. And
never heard that expression. I'm shocked. I love it.
Really?
Yeah. That's a lot. What do I know?